Well, good afternoon, everybody. I'd like to call the Beta Board of Ketchikan to order. It's 1:33. Mary, are you with us in Fairbanks? Just to make sure you can hear us?
Yes, I can hear you fine. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Sherry, would you roll call the board?
Mr. Wilkins?
Present by teleconference.
Ms. Nygaard? Here. Commissioner Bell?
Yes, here.
Mr. Dick?
Here.
Mr. Cruz?
Here.
Commissioner Rodell, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Thank you. Okay, we have a quorum.
Thank you. And roll call staff and public, please.
Okay, we'll do roll call here in Ketchikan first, Crin, and then we can do it in the room there.
Okay. All right.
Ted, Ada.
Sherry Peterson, Ada.
Chris Anderson, Ada.
Sugar Cap, Ada. John Springsteen, Ada.
Kirsten Reuter, Ada.
And the public in the room?
Doug Ward of Baker, Alaska.
Heather Herndon on behalf of Bokan Mountain.
Okay, there's only three of us in the room, so we'll start with...
Jerry Jude, Department of Law.
Miranda Tuchel, Accutite.
Crin Kampanen, Ada.
Is this the third one?
That's it. Just us three.
Jerry, this is Bill Phelan. I'm calling in via my office.
Okay. And can you take roll call of the people on the phone, Crin?
Okay. For people on the phone, can you please give your name and who you represent?
Sure. My name is Don Delamater. I'm with Chittenasauk Native Corporation.
Yes, my name is Charlie Cicera, and I'm also with Chittenasauk Native Corporation.
Corey Borgeson with Golden Valley Electric Association.
Heather Herndon, and going to talk about Bokan Mountain claims. Thank you.
Guy Archibald, Southeast Alaska Conservation Council.
This is Amy Broughton from NWH Global.
And this is Rick Adcock from NWH.
Chris Brown, NWH.
No, seven.
Brad Kiefer with Northern Bank.
Is there anybody else on the line that didn't take their name? Okay, roll call is done.
Thank you, Sherry. Next up on the agenda is board meeting minutes. Next is board meeting minutes for June 4th, 2014.
Paragraph second paragraph in the end, it starts with my name. There's a sentence, just a moment. On my phone there. There's a sentence in there, fourth sentence says, this project has to come in below $28 to $30 to be a substitution alternative. If I said that, that's clearly incorrect. So I would just ask that that sentence be deleted or corrected. I suspect what I said is somewhere between 18 and 20, but I don't remember, but it's clearly not 28 and 30. We've never talked those numbers. But so
I agree, Gary.
We'll start.
Any objections to the changes? All right. There's your
name. Thank you.
Here. Any other discussion on meeting minutes? All right, so we have them approved. Next up on the agenda is the public comments. I guess we'll start with folks in the room first. And please limit yourself to 3 minutes. This is a comment where the board may ask you questions, not where you ask the board questions. Testimony type stuff. So anyway, for FYI.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Twice in the last hour. My name is Bob Weinstein. I work for the Respect of the Field Representative for the Liberty. And just very briefly, I'll try to stay well below 3 minutes. Senator Leggett is a strong supporter of both the Dibla and the Spokane Mine Project. He and staff, both here in DC, have met with company officials. He's had these visits. Both mine projects, and I think more importantly, as you know, one of the issues that we have to use is land federal. In this case, it's Forest Service land, much of which is what is called short roadless, subject to regulation. Never should have been implemented in Alaska, but the roadless rule. But in any case, part of the difficulty that any development has. Any permit that's in a road area requires public secretarial approval, and one of the things that our office has done, the Senate personally has done, staff here in D.C. has been monitoring the permits, having communication with the Forest Service Chief and the Secretary himself as needed to make sure that the project and the exploration for the project moves in time and given the critical needs to do that and under schedule and helicopters and contract and so on. And then finally, I just want to say, since I heard earlier, one of the issues that you'll be looking at is do these projects have community support? And I can tell you, as a long-term president of Ketchikan, somebody who has been to virtually needed for both of these projects as well as in my official capacity that we did. Both projects enjoy very broad support in Ketchikan, Southeast, and elsewhere. And no question that development of the mine and both companies are going to be a huge economic to Southeast and the entire region, the state of Alaska. So, thank you.
Thank you. Any questions from board members?
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
I barely heard any of that. Is there any way you could fix it so we could hear better on the phone?
Thank you.
Is there anybody else that wants to make public comment here?
I just have a quick.
Okay.
Sharing.
I can try to move the phone or.
No. Please state your name and associates.
I'm Chelsea Gatchin. I'm with the Greater Ketchikan Chamber of Commerce and also here representing the Southeast Conference Board. Simply to, first of all,
from the chamber to say thank you for coming to Ketchikan and taking the time to see some of the different potential projects that are happening here, and also from Southeast Conference just to thank you for your continued commitment to economic development in the state and specifically the Southeast region.
Thank you.
Can I see somebody?
Anybody else in the room testify? Okay, we'll go to online. Anybody online wish to testify?
Yes, this is Guy Archibald of SEAC.
Go ahead. And who are you with?
My name is Guy Archibald, and I represent Southeast Alaska Conservation Council. I've had some written documents submitted to the board. I'll let them speak for themselves. After review of these projects, it's our recommendation that these projects at this time be given a no-go assessment for development loans. Both of these mines are still in the early, highly speculative stage of exploration. We don't think the state of Alaska should be involved in speculative projects that may or may not ever come to development. Neither mine has a measured or proven ore reserve, has submitted a final economic feasibility study. The UCOR mine ore body is at the lowest confidence level of even being economically profitable. The Niblack mine is only at the probable economic category. Furthermore, we feel that the state of Alaska, having both an interest in these mines through the loan and acting under its capacity as a regulatory agency, sets up a dangerous conflict of interest. We believe the UCOR project is especially risky. UCOR, as a company, has zero history of ever bringing a project to development. Again, the ore body is only in the inferred category. The company has not produced a final economic feasibility study, and the preliminary feasibility study is based on high metal commodity prices that no longer exist. UCOR has no contracts in place to sell its commodities, and we feel this project does not meet AIDA's Phase 1 assessment criteria. Again, UCOR has no handle on the total costs for the production of and separation of rare earth oxides, long-term water treatment, long-term bonding and financial assurances. Underground tailings disposal is an unproven technology given the acidic nature of these tailings and the known groundwater issues in the area. There could be serious long-term water treatment liabilities lasting for centuries. After many years of press releases, they've failed to attract any alternative financing options. The project proposal is incomplete for all the reasons stated above. And AIDA, we do not believe, is the right source of funding. With all the push for strategic metals, UCOR, if the project has any value, should have no problem attracting private investment to proceed without loan guarantees from the citizens of the state of Alaska. At this time, we recommend a vote of no-go.
Thank you. Are there any questions from the board? Thank you for your testimony. Does anybody else on the line like to testify?
I'll go next if no one else is available.
Please go ahead. Please state your name.
My name is Heather Hergen, and I'm the firstborn grandchild of Robert Red Dodson at Spokane Mountain Claim. And I'm here to speak on behalf of Spokane Mountain, the claims that UCOR has and doesn't have. Most of this information, I'm just going to list like 10 items, and most of it's public knowledge anyway, if not in court on this legal documentation. Okay, number one, UCOR violated securities law in their own country between 2010 to 2012. UCOR has a relationship. Number two, UCOR has a relationship with Agora Financial that the SEC was investigating for insider trading. I don't know if the corresponding dates coincide or not without a little bit more digging. Number three, UCOR failed on its last three mining deals, Lost Palm and Bottom Brook in Newfoundland and Sound Beach and Newgate, But they kept paying themselves a wage, even though, number four, they have not used, they have not earned $1 of revenue on their financial statements. Number five, Spokane Mountain does not own all the mining claims. Bob Chass, a recently departed Bob Chass, a journalist for the Alaska Journal of Commerce, quoted that UCOR CEO McKenzie was going to sue for the remainder of the claims. Is the state of Alaska going to let UCOR use the $150 million Alaskan dollars to sue other Alaskan miners for those claims? They're going to use it for intimidation? Number six, UCOR's capitalized mining claims are questionable since UCOR stopped paying $60,000 annually to the Dawson State family. Number seven, UCOR's only superior asset, what is the market value of that $25 million since the $25 million is the only asset in that Spokane Mountain? What is it if UCOR defaults? How do the Alaskan people get their money back? Number eight, UCOR's audited financial statement, of course, does not show any buyer contracts. Now, I personally was trying to help UCOR and get contracts with an American car company, namely Tesla. Tesla's never heard of them before. I was actually at an investor event for Tesla where I could have negotiated at least a letter of intent. I've also talked to a couple of aerospace and utility companies as well that showed interest. But UCOR was not interested in speaking to me about that. So, number nine, okay, I gave a draft in November 2012 that would help Alaskans, local Alaskans, do everything they need educational-wise to get licensed and become engineers, to become professionally well-qualified people. But again, UCOR wasn't interested in discussing local hire. So, and number 10, finally, the CEO, Jim McKenzie, has interfered with the Dawson family private affair. Stuff that was absolutely none of his business. He's not family, and he shouldn't have been there. So, I understand that Alaska is desperate for a new entity to tax, but UCOR is not the answer. The solution, if IDA continues to progress with UCOR, I would say a joint venture with an arm's length American entity that's actually earned revenue in this industry, who's actually been responsible environmentally, socially, and financially. And not that some of these contracts should go to American companies and not just the ones that, because James McKenzie, the CEO of UCOR, is off to China in November 2014. Okay, I believe that some of this, what's produced, should go to American companies, definitely the United States government, and not infringe on our sovereignty as a country. And furthermore, there needs to be local employment. There needs to be some plan in place for local people. That means somebody with a 574 Social Security number that lives there as a resident all year long. In addition to, they cannot extort, UCOR cannot extort, and cannot sue the people who don't want to sell their mining claims to UCOR. There's no option. There's no recognized booked option on UCOR's financial statement saying that there was some option. Options expire. If Americans, Alaskans don't want to sell to UCOR, they shouldn't be made to. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions from the board? Hearing none, is there anybody else who'd like to testify? Anybody online like to testify? Going. All right, we will close the public comment period now. That brings up item number seven, new business. We have a loan resolution number 944 Finance Fuel LLC.
This is Susan, and As a Citnisoc shareholder, I'd like to recuse myself from the discussion on item A, the business affiliation with Bonanza Fuel.
So, is there any objection for Susan to recuse herself from that? Any objection?
No.
All right.
Still have the forum, Chair.
All right. Great. Thank you. I'd like you to move to the
Mr. Chairman, I'll move loan resolution number L14-03.
Move before us. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Thank you. Crystal. Ted?
Thank you, Chair. Again, this is resolution L1403, which is requesting ADA to purchase a loan participation with North Rim Bank. ADA's participation would be $7,312,500 of a $8,125,000 loan. This loan is for expanding a storage facility. We have representatives from North Rim here, and the chair, with your approval, I would like to invite Chris up here to answer any questions the board may have, and a representative from the borrower, too.
Thank you.
I knew you couldn't let it go by.
That's right.
Here, I'll give you this, Chip, so I don't spill it around this thing. Good afternoon. I made it. Somebody join us? Or? Okay. Yeah. Well, as Ted indicated, this loan participation request is for Bonanza Fuel LLC. He's giving you the participating loan amounts. It's a 9-10 participation. ADA's term on their participating portion would be 19.7 years. That's a blended average, and Northland would be 10 years. Citnisoc Native Corporation is the guarantor. It is for long-term financing for the expansion of their petroleum storage facility in Nome. And it involves the construction, or we would be terming out the construction, of three storage tanks with a capacity of 2.3 million gallons, which would give them a total fuel capacity storage of 5.9 million. This is under the Qualified Energy Development Project that was recently changed in our regulations for loan participation. In regards to economic development, the project generated 15 construction jobs. It will create three permanent jobs. The project increases the storage and availability of petroleum products in the Nome market. It will also increase competition between the local fuel suppliers. This project also enhances the development of Nome's harbor by providing additional fuel storage to meet increasing demands for marine traffic in the Bering Strait. Having this increased storage capacity will reduce the likelihood of a fuel shortage in Nome, which would potentially have a negative financial impact on the community. In regards to the management, Bonanza Fuel is a wholly owned subsidiary of Citnisoc. I'll call it SNC, Citnisoc Native Corporation. It's a Native Village Corporation established under ANCSA for Native Alaskans living in and around Nome. SNC purchased the borrowing entity in 2003. They are a well-established management team, and they are experienced in what they do. In regards to the collateral, we would take a first lien position on the storage facility. We would take a deed of trust and a UCC filing that will encumber the real estate, the improvements, the equipment for the whole facility. It's 7.95 acres, located in an industrial in an industrial area of the Port Nome and the airport. And they would have nine storage tank facilities and five metal buildings that support the operation. We did have this, or the bank actually, had the project appraised through American Appraisal Associates and located, I think their head office is in Texas, and they specialized in these kind of appraisals. It was appraised at $11.3 million. You've received additional financial information separately to this. All the environmental issues mentioned have been resolved to the satisfaction of the lender. We do have a related debt that has been approved but not funded, and this is in the amount of $6,637,500. It's going to be guaranteed by Sydney Stock, and we anticipate that that would close, we're thinking the third week in August. So the strength of this project are that the borrower's debt service coverage is 6.52:1, which is very strong. Guarantor's net worth brings solid outside financial support to the project, and the management and business operations are successful as evidenced by their history. In regards to weaknesses, there's always an environmental risk with this type of property, but the history of responsible operations and insurance for spill leakage help mitigate those risks. There will probably be competition from other suppliers that could, to some degree, squeeze their margins. However, the increased size of the facility project will allow the borrower to sell a higher volume of product at a lower margin and still be profitable. As you can see by their financial information, they are very profitable. In regards to portfolio diversification, we, and this would be March 31st numbers, we have a zero. percent as statewide in this kind of project, and also the same in the northern region. That would change with the approval of this project to 2% in the region, statewide, and in interior 100%. In regards to loan covenants, we would require the borrower to provide financial information annually. That's fairly standard. And the lender would establish financial performance and condition covenants, and they'll be reviewed and approved by us before we go forward. In regards to Ada's capacity to do this, in fiscal year 15, the capacity is $60,847,579, and you can see by the chart given as to what's been approved and committed that there are sufficient funds allocated under the loan participation program for this request. We think it's a strong request, and in that regard, the staff recommends approval as it's presented. So I know that I have North Ram on the phone as well as representatives from Sydney Stock, so we'd be open.
Thank you, Chris. Are there any questions from the board? Questions related on the related debt part of it. Is there any particular reason why we haven't funded that today?
It's a construction project, and they are completed with it. No, in answer to your questions, there's nothing really holding it up except the borrower hasn't turned it out yet. He's just not sure about it yet. So,
construction of?
It's the bingo tower.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. And we got a little tour of it, by the way, and it looks very nice.
No questions? I do, just getting back to the Stockton Corporation, the Jared Ford, then. Is there a maybe just high-level explanation as to what happened to the revenue between the Stockton policy?
Can you
answer? Well, we would need to ask them if they want to discuss that in public or else we'd have to go into executive session.
Tom, do you have any feelings about that particular question being part of it is referenced in there. Never mind.
Okay.
Yeah, no, we're good.
It's a change in revenue, but I didn't catch which period it was for.
Yeah. Russell, do you have one?
Yeah.
Crystal?
Oh.
Yeah. I've got a couple quick questions.
Okay.
So the environmental aspect of this project, it mentioned insurance.
Yes.
Could you tell me how much insurance is there, amount that they have to keep? And is Ada additionally insured?
We would be an additional insured. And I am not completely sure of the level. So, Tom, do you have the dollar amount that you're going to be insuring this facility?
I could pull that right away. I don't have that information on the top of my head, but I could actually, I'm here in the office, so I could go grab it.
Okay. We'll go to the second question then.
All right. So who are the other competitors? In this market?
Yes, I do have that.
Crowley is the primary, and then there the Gnome Joint Utility Systems, which isn't really competitive. They do other things. And in other words, they're not completely in the same market.
And then the capacity, they're going to store fuel. Is there a particular type of fuel?
Mm-hmm. There is. Primarily, I have too much paperwork here. Bonanza Fuel, Tom, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe Bonanza Fuel sells 100% of fuel for marine and home business heating.
Yes, correct.
Diesel fuel?
Yes, ultra-low diesel.
Yeah, very little sulfur power generation, and no joint utility systems, I believe, purchases their own fuel. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
Where does the fuel come from?
It's a competitive market that's either like Southwestern, Delamater. They come either from Nikiski. It's a marketplace.
I missed some of the names.
So the Kiski refinery, does it come from anything from Petrostar out of Valdez?
I don't know. It may have in the past.
And it's my understanding, too, Tom, that you're considering aviation fuel, but not until 2015?
This is Charlie, and yes, that's true.
Charlie, okay. Hello, Charlie.
Hi.
So is the construction done?
Yes, the tanks are complete. They're operational, and we've received fuel in them, so everything's working.
Funded out of pocket.
I was going to say that my next question was self-funded.
Yeah.
Waiting for the
ready for insurance. One last question on the insurance.
Oh. Tom, were you able to get that number on the insurance?
He's not back in the office. He stepped away to get it.
All right, thank you.
So, Chris, on
we haven't closed this yet, so we don't.
Yeah, on the insurance, whatever the value is, do you do an analysis to make sure it's the proper amount?
It's usually covered, yeah.
Do you have a third party do it? Do you do it internally? What is the feature within your group to analyze that?
Well, typically, insurance on this is a little bit different, you know, than on a commercial building. But
right.
I think
it's not replacement that.
Right. I think you'd want at least one for one. I don't think you want under insurance. So, you know, we're going to have to. We'll look at the appraisal.
You've got asset value, and then
right.
You got pollution liability, which is probably way greater than the value of the asset, and I assume they have both?
Yes, because it's references that they do have.
And this is our first loan in this
right.
country,
right?
So it's
different.
That's why I'm asking these questions, is because it really drives down this, you know, 10 years from now, we've got a 19.7-year exposure.
Right. Right.
On a loan,
mm-hmm.
and how do we look at that?
Brad, do you have any other kind of input as to the conditions that North Rim would put on this in regards to insurance and pollution insurance? Brad.
And by the way,
this is
Tom. I'm back. Are you ready?
Oh, okay. Hi, Tom. How much insurance are you putting on this?
Currently, right now, our pollution liability is $6 million per occurrence and $8 million in aggregate.
Okay. And Brad, are you there?
I am.
Yeah. Okay. Does North Rim have any kind of conditions on this as to what their minimum insurance requirements would be?
Not on the pollution side. And so it's just whatever ADA's requirements are that we go with.
Okay. We'll look at that. We'll definitely look at that.
All right. That sounds like a good idea.
Yeah.
Thank you. Are there any questions from Jerry or Angela?
No questions here.
Okay. Jerry? I'll make sure.
No, I'm fine. Thank you.
Okay. Well, if there's no questions, we have a resolution for us. Jerry, you can...
Commissioner Rodell?
Yes.
Mr. Wilkins?
Aye.
Ms. Nygaard?
Yes.
Mr. Dick?
Yes.
Yes.
All right. Would you have it?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good idea.
Yes, she didn't vote, so she didn't even ask her.
All right, next up on the agenda is the overview of findings of the overview of financing a project utilizing bonds.
Yes, Chair. Again, as we were... I'll do that to a meeting. as we're talking and looking at SB 99, which was an authorization again by the legislature to allow ADA to utilize its bonding tools if it would decide to go forward with funding either of these projects. That's one of the things that I want to again stress to the board is the legislature bonding authorization isn't telling ADA that it has to finance the project. It is allowing ADA, if ADA decides to move forward with that project, to utilize bonding as a tool in that, and also setting the limit. So if we were going to go forward, say, with NIDLAC, and we wanted to do $180 million in bonds, we'd be limited to the amount that is in that authorization. We'd have to go back. So again, we thought it would be good to revisit all the statutes that deal with how we utilize our bonding authority and our bonding tools. So if it's all right with the board and the chair, I'd like to bring up Michael Lamb, and he could give a very quick presentation on how we, what steps we have to use to issue bonds for a project.
All right. Michael?
Here.
I thought I would have to run that thing.
Chair, do you want to wait for Commissioner Bell?
No.
So, in some of these slides, you saw earlier, and some of Ted's comments, quite frankly, are a good lead-in. But this is kind of a, some general, some of you haven't been on the board before, and what ADA does. And I guess I would almost just, as a lead-in, to encapsulate what I'm going to talk about, really is under, like, basically four different areas, with most of it being in one area. The first area gets to be, should ADA use its capacity to invest in a project, which, in simple terms, for me, means, should we write a check out to invest in a project? And the second question that comes from that, depending on the size of the project, especially as we're talking about here, is do we need to go out and borrow money in order to help cover the check? Writing a check is real easy, just fill it out. You need to clear the bank. So the second question is, do we need to go borrow money? And if we're going to go borrow money, which gets to the third issue, which some of Ted's slides earlier today and the ones I'm going to cover mainly hit, is what are all the authorizations that are required? What are the legal requirements that exist? And I guess that what I want to say is sometimes we look at them as like barriers, whatever, that
I think sometimes can get excited about projects, and the statutes have a lot of wills and shalls and therefores, so that someone, the process actually acts as the vanguard, not to just get excited and go incur debt that maybe shouldn't have been incurred. And then finally, just a little bit, what happens when you go to the market? So should you write a check? Should you write a check? Do you need to borrow money? If you need to borrow money, what do you have to do? And then going from there. So the first one, really, we're kind of here to talk about Senate Bill 99, if you will, with regards to Ucourt Volcan or Niblack. And I added in the center up here the important thing about should all requirements be met. Ted said, it's really, we were given permission. It is not a directive to do. So bond authorization requirements, before any bonds can be issued, and here's where ADA must comply with its own due diligence process. Secondly, any bonds issued, again, must meet criteria under state statute for issuing bonds. Specifically, and I italicized on here, for a development project, which is under Section 172. So most of the time, we were doing projects, either 155 or 172, but there's specific criteria relating to 172 and issuing bonds with that. You saw this a little earlier, and you guys have seen it, and it isn't to really go into detail, and Ted had talked about it.
Michael, I'd just like to, these pages are not numbered on the pages that we have in front of us. It may be problematic.
Oh, that's something.
My packet doesn't have numbers.
So. Seeing that they replace, we have that.
Okay. And does Gary and Angel have this? Put the numbers on it?
Gary? Mine aren't numbered, Dan.
Did you get the newest one, Gary, that was sent out by email?
I might have. I got the one out of my packet. That's the one I'm looking at.
Right. We have a replacement that came out, I believe, Monday night. But
okay, I'll look for that. I didn't realize I needed another one. Okay.
So, Michael, would you, when you change pages, would you put the header up there for them so they know what page you're on?
Thank you, Sharon. I actually added the page numbers.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I didn't know it, so.
I'm on the analysis decision-making process, and again, the very first thing I talked about is should capacity, ADA's limited capacity to use on a project, and this is the formal process, the suitability piece, the feasibility piece, the debt structuring, and then going on, and if you look at this also, you'll see on the left-hand side, it's kind of a matrix, actually. It's a very nice diagram, but on one of the outputs, when you get to the phase three, the debt structuring is the finance plan, which is required. Part of the finance plan, if you will, in regards to what I said earlier, do we need to go borrow money, issue debt in order to help write the check? That would be part of the finance plan, which is part of this analysis. So ADA following its own requirements.
And the finance plan is required by statute.
Yes, and I will somewhere it should get to that. So I'm moving to review of authorizations, which is slide 5. And as we talked about, I thought that was a signal.
Well, I was just going to say maybe also next time, I can't read this, and I've got glasses and I can't read it. So when we get stuff like this in our packets before, I was trying to follow this when I was reviewing the packet. So,
okay.
And that's, you're not the first one to do it. So, if Ted, would you
bet.
Would you read these things? Thanks.
Yeah.
I can't read it. Can you read it?
So, purposely, I didn't want to spend time on, but you're right. My eyes are old like yours, too. So review of authorization, specifically the reference here that bond authorizations, number one, they're more complicated. I pull a lot of general obligation, full faith and credit, taxpayer, pretty straightforward. These, when you start getting these projects, are different.
And again, limits on bonds are imposed by the state. Again, the issue of the due diligence and being a vanguard for the debt capacity. Legislative approval of the $10 million, specifically when we talked about development projects. Again, there's a statutory reference right there. Bonds require specific authorization a lot of times afterward, and the IEP is an example. And these two are ones, example again, that they were done up front. You have to have it. The second, third bullet sort of go together. These are in place. But again, the authorization is not a directive. It is, we are giving you permission, provided you everything else that you're supposed to do. Conduit bonds, because this is supposed to be a little bit general. Conduit bonds, like the one that was just done for the hospital, for example, and then bonds for financing loan participation, actually do not need legislative approval. Just a little distinction with that.
Michael, just a quick question. So when the project, when they say authorization to bond a project, are they talking from bookend to bookend of a project? Is there any part of a project that's not, for instance, if they had to have a receiver facility someplace other than Alaska that needed to be financed? Is it strictly to the location, or is it the whole project in its whole from cutting the first tree down to get to like a mine
and
the product to market?
And Chair, I can answer that. It truly depends on the wording of the authorization. We've seen authorizations that are very wide that say, for example, development of Hatcher Pass in Matsu Pearl that gives wide latitude, whereas some bonds say a port facility in Nome and gives the limits, puts the gates on what it is. So it's truly based on how the wording of the authorization is from the legislature.
Okay.
And the last bullet, besides, there's a 6, a 10, and essentially a $400 million limitation in a 12-month period. Just another one of those. In general, there's a total amount you can do.
And that's a rolling
amount. Every 30. So, slide 6, pre-bond project requirement. And one of the things, and Ted talked about this earlier, that this is another one in 44-88-90E, which is a real critical one, I think, and actually 88-95D. But ADA must determine that the project has to be economically advantageous to the state, the general welfare, and economic growth, you know, for the state in total, which, again, there was conversation, discussion about local, sometimes local approval. And everybody needs to sort of benefit in order to do that. And with regard to some of the testimony and what's here, just is required that ADA is required, must determine that whoever the project applicant is, the person that we're going to end up having a deal and going potentially in debt with, that they are a financial responsible party. So that has to be looked at. Provisions are made to make sure that public facilities aren't damaged. So Commissioner Bell did a great job talking about what large are the railroads and all that stuff in her discussion. But if you think about a large project, it's going to affect the schools, could affect the roads, could affect the water, the sewer, the electric. What about the solid waste disposal? And so one of the requirements that ADA must determine when it's looking at a project, is there a need to make provision to also take care of any public facilities or infrastructure? Will the project create or retain employment reasonably? I think Ted did a great job talking about that, and just a dramatic example would be that ADA should, in my opinion, never use, say, $15 million that's finance capacity for two jobs. That would not be a good use of that. So somehow it's required that ADA look at that. Pre-bond project requirements continuing, slide 7. Before entering into agreement, and I put it in here again, specifically we're talking about section 172 development bond, ADA will, so here's again the requirement, compile a public document, you know, has to be put into writing with all those different sources, the projected economic, social, environmental effects, and as you saw earlier, ADA also has to hold
at least one or potentially more than one public hearing with four other departments of the state to make sure that public testimony is taken with regard to all these things. Again, more hoops that have to be jumped through. Local approval requirements, and we heard about this one, another one of the provisions under for a Section 172 project, this $6 million requirement, the ADA, again, will obtain approval from a Regional Resource Advisory Council. So if you're in an unincorporated area of the state, you know, within 30 days after, I think it's the board, after they're dead to the board, then the governor has to appoint that committee, if I have it right. If not, the municipality area, and it could be, and I talked earlier that if the project were within the confines of the geographic boundaries of a city, which would be inside of the borough, then you would need two resolutions. If you're just the borough, then you would need the one, which is the correct interpretation. And one of the things, like the 6th and the 10th, if it's in a local area, you think, well, why is there a difference? Well, suppose a project's $8 million. You wouldn't necessarily have to go to the legislature to get approval for it, but you do have to look at the local. So there's a reason for those different numbers. Approval requires, it has to have a resolution of the governing body or the advisory council. And this other vote, before you even consider a resolution of the governing body, they have to hold a public hearing as well for the region. Finance plan requirements, again, if you remember, yes, Dana.
I have another question, Mike. So, Mike, on the pre-bond projection requirements and your local approval requirements, for a bond that's less than $10 million, it doesn't have to go to the legislature. But if it's over six, it has to go get local approval. What percentage of a $9 million, or what's the percentage of a bond cost to do all this for less than $10 million bond? Yes. How many dollars are we spending to get to a less than $10 million?
What I can tell you is that I could have a broad answer and not to be flippant, but it's kind of like how much does dinner cost when you go out. What I can tell you is we used to set aside for a GO bond, 2% got set aside. I usually spent about 1%, and then the rest of it would release the public work. Now, if you have a deal, for example, if things work out, there should be another condo deal that's coming where a bank actually called us, wanted to do it. They had already pre-screened the buyer, so on behalf of the buyer, I suspect the cost of that is going to be a lot less. So I would say it's just a real rough, what I'm used to, maybe 1% of the deal is what it costs.
So a $5 million bond would be $50,000 to do all this stuff?
Depending upon how you did it, and depending upon how many parties and how many bond council, depending upon, you know, how many people are involved in the transaction. There's another slide here that has all the parties in it. And so this isn't meant to sound bad, but the more parties there are in a transaction, the more people that are getting paid. And so,
well, you don't do the financial analysis under that 1%.
No, that's the financial analysis would be done through our feasibility, as we do on a normal project. Then
that's reimbursable. Is that
yes,
by the project sponsor?
It can be. That's up to the board. Dana, that would go through as any other project do. Remember, as we look at projects, we have reimbursement agreements where the board and the potential project participant share in the cost of the feasibility analysis. And that usually what Michael's saying is that you're going to go through all the process that we would normally go through for a project, and then you roll that into going out for a bond.
So maybe help by clarifying. The fourth stage of what I said is that you go through and you've met all the requirements and you have all the authorizations. Now you go to the market. Generally, it costs about 1%, what my history has been, 1% to pay the underwriters, to pay the financial advisors, to pay the rating agencies, their analysis. You just have different, the trustee. So that usually is that. I think if you're asking what would it cost to do the analysis, to get to the point you decide to do it, that's not included in that 1%, 1% to 2% range that we set aside.
All right. I'm just trying to wonder where you know, a $2.5 million bond may not be worth it because they should go through the due diligence process to get it to.
Exactly. And that's something we'll be discussing, Chair. Again, one of the rule of thumbs is exactly what you're talking about. The cost of doing something under $10 million usually makes it not worth doing a tax-exempt bond because you eat up those interest savings.
Right.
So the lower it is, the less savings you have in interest savings for going to the market. That's exactly what you're saying.
The short of it is that in a public setting, with all of the documentation that everything was done that's required to be done, as in, will the newspaper needs to provide a certification that they actually put a public notice in the paper on a particular day. There's so much documentation that's required. It just costs a lot to do a public deal. And it's the same thing when I used to be at the borough. Some did $2 million, $2 million, just wouldn't go to the market. It just cost too much to do.
Thank you.
Let's see, where is that here? So the finance plan requirements, one of the requirements under 88.73, again, shall submit a finance plan to the state bond committee, the governing legislature, before it issues any bond and incurs any debt for the project. And here's an interesting one, just another one as a general. If a project requires financial assistance from the state, the state financial system, that money must be available. So if you did a deal, you have some private money, and let's say there's some grant money involved, and then you were going to go borrow, those other pieces have to be done, available, not maybe before you go out and issue a debt. You can't just...
And I think what that is, Chair, and to board, is so that it's a protection for the state, too, right? So if you went out and said, well, I've issued $20 million, you need to help us with $5 million of grant money. So I think it's more to ensure that all the pieces are in place first, like Michael said, before you go out.
Yeah, and there's language in the statute to even say you need to, if you're going to do a project, you should try to minimize the cost of the state and put it in here. But there are those other things where, anyhow, I talked a little bit earlier about that if you're going to go out to the market, the parties that are involved in issuing bonds. And generally in the center, as you can see up here, the aid of staff, finance, accounting, credit, always you have the AG, the executive directors involved. And the aid of board has an absolute role, even to get to the point of there is no going to the market unless you've approved the project, which then we're figuring out through the finance plan how do we pay for it. And I don't know if you've ever heard the term bond counsel, their blue book. There's specific attorneys that are allowed to do that type of work. ADA would always have its own bond counsel and our own financial advisors. Depending on the complexity of the project, you could have a feasibility consultant where it's such a specialized thing, you really want to have somebody else make sure that in order to meet the criteria with the statutes and it makes business sense, you have that type of expertise. There's the auditor. The bond trustee is usually for the life of the bond, just like going to a mortgage or escrow guy. The borrowers usually have counsel too, especially conduit financing. Bond insurers not so much anymore after, you know, the meltdown, a lot of those guys out of the market, credit enhancers, but sometimes you could still have those. The rating agency, Fitch, Moody's, Standard & Poor's all involved. And, of course, in the top left, the investment bankers, the underwriters, usually have their bond counsel, too. What you end up having is a lot of bond counsel at the deal. Because, especially when you have tax-exempt, it isn't just what are the contractual terms and what's all the language on the IOU, but you also have Internal Revenue Service provisions that you are meeting, and you get into FTC, you get into all kinds of stuff. It's very complex.
So if you go one slide before that, it says ADA shall submit a finance plan. It's up to their discretion, and when you're going through the feasibility of how much information you want this audience to see, or why is there shall instead of not for the finance plan?
In the,
I would think you'd want to know as much as you can about the financial stability before.
Correct. Part of the finance plan, there's provisions actually in the statute that talk about the kind of information that you should have. And so, if you remember again that you've done the, is it suitable? Does it meet the criteria? And then you've gone through the whole feasibility, which is, should you or shouldn't you do it? And now you really to how are we going to pay for it?
Right.
And that is has to be laid out, has to be put on paper, has to go all the information that's available and in writing and that is pertinent that informed decision makers should know and have in front of them ought to be included in a finance plan. Let's see. So lots of people, complex, lots of law. Including federal law when you're doing tax exempt. Development of the bond indenture. The bond indenture, in my simple terms, is just the IOU. It's the formal written thing. And the revolving cash and an existing structure. But for each new series, every time you go out and sell a bond, there's a supplemental indenture, basically a series resolution, and then there's a new disclosure document in government column official statement, private worldly column and perspective. And I actually brought it so with it. Here is the resolution number G92E, which is the amended and restated revolving fund bond resolution. It's a resolution creating and authorizing the issuance revolving fund bond of the Alaska Export Authority. This was originally adopted in 1990, then amended in 96 and 98, 2007, 2008, 2008 again, and then again in 2010. So this is what sort of gives the board all the framework, the structure to go and issue debt. And then when you go and issue debt, this is actually the rest, this is just a little under 50 pages. And then this is the resolution G1001, which was for the series 2010, which is the supplement. So this is like the big rules, and then for a specific deal when somebody comes, when we basically, the executive director and the team comes to you and says, we have a resolution, it would be not the whole thing. It would just have a little bit more of the terms. And then the disclosure, it is the document, again, prospectus is what you usually hear when you go and invest, but it lays out all the facts that are required, and this is where you see the SEC gets involved and make sure that anything that a lender should know is included, and it is signed off. Somebody, I actually, the CFO usually ends up signing that document, and they sign it after the board has also looked at it and sanctioned it. It's a big deal. Staff, bond counsel, financial advisor all develop those documents that are specific to the sale, conduit bonds, same, you know, conduit revenues. So if we did those, the same type of a deal, you have to have the resolution. Bond types. Am I good? Oh, I'll look back here. David's revolving fund. If we did like these ones with Section 117, they would be kind of general obligation bonds, and you look at ADA's credit and the specific project's credit. If you did revenue bonds, you look at specific products. Ted had mentioned next door, the Snettisham, that is actually a revenue bond that the revenues from the sale of electricity pays for the deal. Conduit bonds, you look at the credit worthiness of the borrower, and then you know, ADA's bonds historically rated by Moody's and S&P. Board approval documents, important again, the board, prior to selling bonds, the board must authorize bond sale, specifically approving the terms. And, you know, when you look at the very beginning of this thing, it talks about just an idea that the denomination, the meaning method, place of payment, the pledge, the redemption of the bond, taxability, notes redemption, I mean, that's the type of stuff that the board gives authorization to. The award of the bond finalization, in the end, gets delegated by the board. Generally, the executive director signs stuff, and the CFO signs stuff. The bonds, when you go out, it can be competitive, negotiated, or to your question earlier, Mr. Bookchair, that if it's a small deal, it may just be direct sale to the bank, because that's what makes sense to do. The other thing that's kind of important is the board sets the maximum interest rate on the bond prior to going to market, too. The board says whether or not you do a deal. The board gives authorization in the terms within the resolution. And then the board also says, go forward, go out and borrow money. But you cannot borrow money in excess of some amount when you go to the market. So you set a, we have the board set the limit there.
When you say amount, dollar amount or
percentage?
Interest rate?
Interest rate.
And the dollar amount.
Well, you set the dollar amount by the amount that, by then you've already said you have authorization to borrow $12 million. And then you say not to exceed, maybe you'd say 5.5% right now, maybe 6%.
And the board gets that information from council or somebody that says, here's the
right. Here's
the low or high end, you've got to be in this in order for something to go.
Well, I've never seen the low, it's just set to the high. I mean, what you're really hoping for is as low as possible, but the high, the board says, no matter what, you don't get to go over this amount, no deal.
But does someone consult with the staff?
You bet. We have our bond consuls, and the underwriters are working with us through this whole process and giving you estimates of where they think the market's at and what you should expect.
Based upon the type of credit with bar on the market, you have an idea, and you're a little bit above that, not much. Usually maybe a percent or something. A lot can happen in a few days. At the closing, you know, all the final documents, you fill in stuff, and the big deal of lot certifications get made by everybody. Final day of closing, you know, basically the bonds or obligation starts once and the money gets transferred, just like, again, mortgage closing, same type of a deal. You know, the whole issue here and the stuff that we're talking about here is Ada's done a lot of bonds, a lot of deals. See, we have the AA rating, but Ada's actually issued $1.28 billion in bonds, and then on top of that, 316 bond deals, another $1.35, almost $2.5 billion in bond deals. And again, you know, the point of this was to say that it's great we have authorization, it's exciting, there's a lot of opportunity, but it's not a requirement you go issue these steps, that proper due diligence, and there are statutory requirements that have to be met in order to go to the market. And I'm going to conclude my comments, Mr. Chair.
Chair, just one last thing on this, whereas when we go out for bonds, it is even a more, we do a very thorough due diligence, but the market will also do that. Their goal is never to have a bond that they buy go into default too. So there's even a much more thorough due diligence even by the market after we do ours.
Yeah, if I may, Mr. Chair, 4488.095D says, you know, the project is economically and financially feasible and able to produce revenue adequate to repay the bond. So even though it's a general obligation, there is still a tremendous amount of scrutiny that has to happen to the project. So,
okay. Are there any questions from the board? In one of our previous presentations, you said we had to, in order to keep our AA plus rating, we had to keep a percentage of cash on hand, called liquid assets, right? And what percentage was that?
One of the things which, if you went through that 48-page resolution, for our outstanding GO bonds, the market data channel, it's actually 25%. So $80 million general obligation bonds outstanding, we have to have 25% of that, so $20 million sitting in liquid investments that mature within less than 1 year.
Okay.
Is that your question?
That's my question.
Okay.
So with the recent legislative authorizations, should these two projects get to the finish line, what is the dollar amount that we have to reserve in cash?
That
$300 million would be, what, $60, $70 million in cash?
If the, my short answer without my friend Jerry Judet, AG's supporting me, but the way I understand the resolution right now is that those are the terms. And so unless the board changes that or something changes, then it is 25% of the outstanding accounts to be set aside in investment that matures.
There's an up to limit.
I don't. I just know that it's 25% of what we look at.
But there's an up to. And then you also have the other one is there's a amount of income that you have to continue to generate.
Yes, there has to be a coverage. So one of the interesting things about the capacity model, which keeps evolving, and it's kind of actually got to the exciting point when you have these projects, that when you give consideration to the fact of what even happens to your capacity if you have to take money out of your longer-term investments, and in order to meet this, you move them to shorter-term investments, which in today's market rate is like, you know, even a one-year T-bill, you're at, 11 basis points, 12 basis points. I mean, so there's impact.
Again? Yeah, my last question is perfect. My last question is, remind me again, or the board and the folks in the room here, where does ADA stand with this AA plus rating? Where do we fit in the finance development for public corporations?
We're at the top of the heap. Right
top
now.
Of the heap.
Most agencies, a lot are in the double B, triple B. Most agencies shoot for A. And as we go through that budget, we'll be talking about what our target range is to AA plus is very high. And as we start utilizing our debt, we expect that we will go down just because you are utilizing more of your debt capacity.
There's a duality of nature to it. On one hand, it's great to say I'm a AAA and I'm a AA+. But in order to be there, you have to have a lot of investments that are exceeding the liquid, which means you're also foregoing investment income that you may
correct.
Otherwise have if you had to invest a different way.
Sure. Okay. Are we
okay?
Thank you. Been requested to take a 5-minute break. So we will resume in 5 minutes.
Did you hear that, Corinne? We're taking a 5-minute break.
Yes, ma'am. We will put everything on pause.
Thank you.
So now Terry is sending me video.
Where is she?